Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners, Tyler Cook and Tony Payne. And today we're going to take a high-level topic on and answer some questions that people might have about equity compensation. This is pretty intricate. We're going to avoid certain examples. I just want to give some overarching concepts, if you will. So let's talk about what that means to somebody like me who's not a CFP. Let's explain, what is it?
Good.
Yeah, equity compensation's fun, first of all. It means you're working for typically a larger company or maybe a small company that's just getting started, and they're giving you equity, usually shares in the company in one form or another, and you have the possibility to grow with the company.
Yeah, the idea there is to incentivize the bigger picture of just outside of the salary, but trying to grow the business. So they give rewards in that sense, and they'll maybe even upfront structure your compensation package where it's part salary, part equity, if you hit certain targets and milestones.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What exactly are people getting when they talk about stock options or restricted stock units?
Depending upon the flavor, the right to buy stock at a certain price, or they might just be given the stock outright at a certain price, and then the option to sell it later on. There might be restrictions or covenants. Maybe they have to hit a certain share or market cap, or they have to hit certain revenue goals. You know, each plan document may be a little different, or each agreement. And that's where getting all of the documentation behind it's really important. The grant letter, the agreement, you know, all of those things behind it are really important. And each year they might even be a little different. But again, it's having the documents, understanding the plan, and getting that documentation in front of you, not just the word of when you got that job offer, but getting it in writing and understanding it.
Mm-hmm. So if I can, I guess I should have asked this first, but my brain is now curious. Are these part of the stock market? Are these programs part of the stock market?
If it's a publicly traded company, sure.
So how does that work?
Use Amazon, for example, where you see that quite a bit. A lot of the high-flying tech companies, and Amazon's got AWS now as part of one of their platforms. So they'll offer incentives of actual stock in Amazon as part of the compensation package along with their base salary. And it can be significant. It can be half your pay.
Is it just one stock, or is it?
It'll be that company, right? That company's
okay,
stock.
Okay, so it's not multiples. It's just that company.
Correct.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay. How do people deal with taxation on something like that?
Well, it's tricky. To Tony's point, there's a lot of ways it could go. Capital gains tax, ordinary income, a lot of different ways to look at that. So again, talking to the CPA, understanding what you have, knowing the timelines, because each timeline can be different on how long you hold the stock and what tax treatment comes with that. So having an understanding of that bigger picture is key. But I will say one point to add, diversifying out of those options if you choose to purchase them, like you talked about, or if you've accepted the grant, the idea being you're going to get over-concentrated in that one particular company, especially a huge company like Amazon, for example. If you're doing the plan right and you're diversifying your portfolio, you already own Amazon in some way or shape or form, most likely in a mutual fund type setting. So if you're getting all these stock options from Amazon and Amazon's already the top 5 or 10 holding in your portfolio, now you've created other risks in your plan with, we call it concentrated position risk, where you've got too much money in one particular stock. It's great when it goes up, but it's really bad when it goes down.
And we're just using that as one general example there. I mean, whether it's Amazon or GE or whatever.
Boeing.
Exactly. Yeah. But the idea of it's a big company, and you know what? You're working there. You probably believe in it. You might even like it. You know, you have a little inside knowledge. You're a believer in the company. So naturally, you might see it on the up and come. You might have that little bit of bias there. That's another reason to say, can I be objective? Do I really believe that this is something that I should be in long term, because my pay is already tied to this, my lifestyle is tied to this, and I'm going to have a big portion of my stock tied to this? These are reasons why diversification is really important. And going back to the tax piece as well, sometimes the company themselves will account for that. And before you get the stock, they might already withhold pieces of that, whether it's shares, or they might liquidate some of the shares and withhold the stock for you. So when you get your statements, look at that, because they might already have withheld parts of those shares for you. So when you see your statement, you might see less money than what you thought, maybe because they've already withheld the taxes.
Now, does that work itself into your, let's for argument's sake, say your portfolio is managed through Vanguard? is that a separate statement or
yeah.
Or is that part of your portfolio within the Vanguard model?
We would look at it as a bigger picture, just no matter where the account's at, right? Doesn't matter. But specifically to your question, the stock options or awards would be on a separate brokerage account that the company's got a relationship with, and that's where you buy the option or you buy the stocks. It's they vest in that schedule. It's all dictated upon what the company has set as far as that brokerage account. So that'd be in addition to the rest of the portfolio.
So if the stock market goes down and your Vanguard account is impacted, does that also impact the other stock that you own?
Just
are those two separate entities?
Yeah, two separate. Now, if they were the same stocks in each one, obviously it'd be different, but or similar rather, but two separate scenarios.
Gotcha. So if somebody's wealth is tied up in their company's stock, how do they avoid putting all of their eggs in one basket? Is it just something, and this is where you guys come into play, you know, having somebody, a pro, look at what you've got, right, I would assume?
Yeah, to Tony's point, we were just talking about large companies. This is more on the small side. Private firms are not publicly traded, but there is still stock that the members own of that. And so trying to make sure that when you look at your own planning, that most of your net worth is not tied up in the business. That's really hard to do early on. A lot of times, early stages of growing a business, majority of your net worth is your business, right? The equity in the business. So, and that's where, to Tony's point too, about, I mean, you're there every day. Blood, sweat, and tears, that's a real thing. You're doing that. You're driving it. You believe in what you're doing, mm-hmm. but you can't ignore diversifying as well mm-hmm. along the way.
And it may be because of liquidity. There might not be a ready buyer. It might be because you don't want to sell it, or it might even be because of the taxes. Mm-hmm. You grew this thing out of nothing from $1 into $100 million or whatever it's worth. So everything there might be taxable. So there's all kinds of reasons where you might not be inclined to want to diversify. And if you go back to the options in a publicly traded company, the same idea might apply where you're looking at that tax bill going, gee whiz, do I really want to stomach this? And we've seen it here recently with a lot of the market volatility where, you know what, did you really want to go through it? Even if it came back, even if the stock came back or even ended up ahead, were those sleepless nights really worth it? Was it worth that heartache and maybe some of that volatility to wonder, is the company going to make it through? Is the future going to be there? Let alone, is my retirement plan going to stay intact? That's why we think diversification, managing that tax bill, is probably the right move.
Can you borrow against those accounts?
Oh, let's not bring that up. Yeah. Let's not bring that up.
I'm just curious. I mean, I know you can borrow against one of them, but I just didn't know if that was a thing.
Some may even have mortgages against things like that.
Wow.
So to have company
options. So then if the company tanks. Stock,
yeah, you might even see your house evaporate.
Oh,
yes, Tracy.
Gosh.
Yes, that is a possibility. Yep. And banks will let you do that, and other lenders will, and not something we would recommend, but the idea of trying to avoid taxes is what drives some people so much so that they're willing to overconcentrate. And again, everyone's different. I understand that. And if the stock never goes down, that might be a great move, but I don't stomach that kind of risk myself.
So this question, people, and this might really, I think it relates to it. People often want to use their equity for big things like buying a home or paying for college, using their investments. Is this something that is that they should consider doing, or is it kind of a slippery slope to trigger a tax event?
Business equity or like a portfolio investment?
Portfolio.
Yeah, that can be, depending upon the goal. Like we've set it up scenarios where clients have said, 10 years from now, I want to buy the vacation home from the family. So we planned for 10 years and invested it accordingly to do that. Now, somebody that comes to us and says, hey, I need to take a loan from my 401k, or I need to take a premature distribution from an IRA to go towards a mortgage, that's just the recipe for disaster. Multiple reasons, taxes, penalties, loss of growth because the money's no longer growing. You got to play catch up for retirement. It just compounds into multiple issues.
And there's so much bad information on the internet. I can remember watching two different YouTube channels where they said, yeah, you can borrow against your 401k.
Yeah. I mean, you can. That's a real thing.
I can't even imagine that kind of stuff.
Not a great thing, but you can.
And the rest of that video, did they go on to say, and when the economy tanks and you lose your job and when the taxes are due because, hey, when you lost your job, you had to repay your 401k loan. And because you didn't have the money to repay it, that tax bill came in the mail. And then, wait, what happens after that, Tyler?
Windbreakers.
Yeah, exactly. It's all bad.
Yikes.
It's all bad.
Yeah.
Yikes. Wow. Okay.
Yep.
So what should somebody who's about to see their company go public be thinking about when it comes to taxation and making the most of the windfall?
Not thinking about the windfall yet. Until that wire hits the account, until the money hits, I mean, we've seen it. We've not to go into specifics, but until that wire hits on that Friday, you might be sitting there at 359, hoping and expecting that large figure to hit, and it might be 401 and it never hit. That's real. That can happen. So if you're planning that large purchase or that real thing, don't borrow that money. Don't sign on the dotted line. Let that windfall really happen, and maybe even let time to settle. Let time to, again, make decisions. Let it settle. Let the basically live your life. Let some things happen first before you jump into those big decisions.
And yeah, don't do the Clark Griswold jelly of the month. You know, wait for that check to show up. Yeah, just wait till
that
it's there.
I can relate to.
Yeah.
Great movie. Okay, so when it comes down to passing down stock to family or wealth to family, what are some of the smart moves people can consider to help avoid taxes and keep everything organized using equity in estate and legacy planning?
Yeah, let's use the stock example, because right now, under the current tax law, money that passes on to the next generation, there's the potential for what's called a step-up in basis, which means essentially, let's say you bought a stock years ago as a dollar. It's now appreciated to $10. You pass away. Well, there's $9 of growth in there. If you had sold that while you were alive, you'd have to pay tax on that. But if it goes on to the next generation, the new cost basis is now that $10, the same value. So all that gain from all those years, you don't have to pay a penny in tax on. It's a huge part of the tax law. It gets overlooked quite a bit. But it's a huge benefit for passing money to the next generation. And that's some of those conversations we'll have with people is saying, you know, this they've got an old stock. They like for whatever reason, there's sentimental value to it. It might make sense to just hang on to it.
Yeah,
assuming,
you just read my mind.
Assuming the portfolio is okay mm-hmm. and not over allocated to that. That's the first caveat. But if that's the case, then it might make sense to let that go on to the next generation and inherit essentially tax free.
Wow.
The other one I think of is if it's a small family business, you know, as much as I'm against just giving kids wealth or just giving them an inheritance, if you know this is a family business or something that you'd like to keep in the family as a legacy and they are showing interest in running it or that's the intent, well, earlier on, perhaps let them buy some small interest if they express interest. Maybe it's 1% or 0.5%, but something meaningful, something where they get involved and they're working in it. But you know what? That's ownership. That's interest. That's a seat at the table. Maybe not a real big one. Maybe not a big decision maker, but that's a way to get them involved and get them early on that equity. And if the business is doing well, then you get the opportunity to maybe buy more. And if it's going up in value from a tax perspective, you got them in at one value that, you know what, that's going to go up over time. You're able to do some transactions. It's a neat way to, again, get them involved where eventually if there is that step up in basis or you pass things on, yes, you get that benefit, but you're not just unleashing the business on them all at once. It's more that natural succession plan I talked about in another show. Mm-hmm.
Are there tools people can use to do that?
Definitely. I mean, again, depending upon the ownership structure, that's one of them. Definitely working with an attorney and your accountant to provide the right structure, whether it's shares of ownership, whether there's a trust involved. Again, it gets kind of complex there.
But so you're not talking about like software, like some of the software programs where you can buy stock?
No, not as much as that, so much as the way the ownership's structured in an LLC, an S-Corp, mm-hmm. things like that.
Okay, gotcha.
Family limited partnerships.
There may be that as well. Thank you, Tyler.
Yeah. Well, this was supposed to be equity compensation made simple, but in my brain, this was not simplified.
It never is.
Each plan's different too. Each company's structured differently. There's different factors to consider. Tax laws are different based on types of companies. So there's a lot.
What a universe.
Yeah.
The moral of the story is seek help from the professional team of CFP, CPA, and attorneys. Do it right. Make sure you read the fine print. That's it for today. Tune in next time on the next topic. We hope you'll share with your friends. Catch us on YouTube.
Media. Think big.